Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:47 p.m. and today is November 25th, and it is a rather interesting day in stock markets. The Nasdaq was at a new all-time high. It was a nice dynamic move, although certainly not of the same magnitude that we saw, for example, when it bounced from the region of the trend mean back in October. But it is certainly reasserting on the upside. Semiconductors index, which has been a lead indicator for the Nasdaq over the course of the last few months, also firmed. It hasn't been able to yet push on to new high ground, but this is positive action. What I think is much more important, however, is the rather impressive move we've seen on the Russell 2000. And it really did need to push above this 1600 point level. It has now done so on a reasonably dynamic manner. It has broken out to a new recovery high. Now the most important thing is that it sustained it. This is really quite positive action, however, and it has been the missing ingredient. There has been a clear underperformance of small cap shares over the course of the last 8 or 9 months. That has been one of the things that has worried investors more than anything else. People have been worried about an over-reliance of the wider market on the very large cap shares. That's despite the fact that the equal weighted index has also been breaking on the upside for the S&P 500, but it has been the fact that the smaller caps have been sitting it out, and that they're generally perceived to be much more reliant on the domestic economy than the large caps. Well, the fact that they're now breaking on the upside is, I think, really rather a positive outcome. Well, it is being pegged as one of the reasons for that is because of China making more conciliatory noises about the willingness to enforce patents over the weekend. I would hesitate to think that they're doing that out of the kindness of their hearts. Obviously, it is because the domestic economy in China is slowing down, and of course, the last thing they want is a further intensification of the trade war when you had a landslide victory for pro-democracy parties in Hong Kong over the weekend as well. When we look at the transportation index, it has also firmed in here today. It's been pausing in the region of the upper side of its range. Well, of course, transportation is very much tied to logistics. There has been obviously a marked slowdown in imports from China to the USA as a result of the trade war. But if transportations start to do better from here, well, then that would also be confirmation of the ability of the wider market to continue to push on the upside. Again, the absence of a sustained break to new high ground has been a missing ingredient from a Dow theory buy signal. The Dow Jones, however, was in positive territory in here today, and it continues to extend its break on the upside. The utilities average was among the better performers through the first part of this year, but a process of mean reversion does appear to be now underway. What I think is also worth highlighting is that when we look at some of the other rather significant major indices globally, then we're seeing either evidence of downtrends being broken. That's certainly the case with the KOSPI in South Korea. It's also worth considering that it was some of the early slowdown in the Korean economy that was a lead indicator for the deterioration of synchronized global economic expansion towards the end of 2017. The fact that the Korean stock market is now starting to push back up, that it has broken its downtrend, and then that is also supportive evidence for the view that we are back in a demand-dominated environment. Then you've got the Taiwanese index, which has extended its break above the 11,000 level. It is being led higher by Taiwan Semiconductor, and that is an even more impressive breakout from a well-defined range. What I think is particularly noteworthy is that Taiwan Semiconductor has got a dominant position in the production of 7 and 5 nanometer chips. It's also building out the infrastructure to become dominant in the production of 3 nanometer chips. Well, there isn't anyone else really even close to that kind of sophistication in terms of their manufacturing prowess. That's one of the reasons why we're seeing the share do better. They've spent a good deal of time investing. Now they're reaping the benefits. And of course, we've got 5G getting rolled out next year, and that's going to create demand for those chips as well. Then when we think about Europe, well, the Euro Stoxx index was in positive territory. It's continuing to though pause around this 400 level. 400 has been an area of resistance now for much of the last 4 years. But when we look at it over the course of the last 20, this has been a reasonably steady period of consolidation, quite different to the A-shaped peaks that we saw around 450 in 2000 and in 2007. It does suggest that if it can push through the 400 level, then there is scope that it is going to be able to at least push back up towards the 450 region. The Nikkei was also in positive territory in here today. I continue to think that this range over the last 2 years is nothing more than a first step above the base, and that base, the upper side of that base, is around the psychological 20,000 level. When we then think about what is it that everybody's worried about? Well, certainly people are worried about the inverted yield curve. That's obviously something that people are particularly, I think, animated about. We did have a mild inversion back in August, and generally, an inverted yield curve is a lead indicator for a problem in the economy, anything from 6 to 18 months hence. The time to be particularly alert is following the inversion when the yield curve starts to shoot higher, particularly when it starts to move through the 50 basis point level in a dynamic manner. That's when we need to pay particular attention to the consistency of trends. But what's particularly also worthy of mention is that in that interval between when you get the inverted yield curve and when the yield curve starts to spike higher again, then stock markets generally tend to do quite well. In 2006, between the inversion and the peak in 2007, the market went up 30%. Between 1998 and the peak in 2000, the market went up 50%. Well, we're just seeing breakouts now, and we're seeing breakouts on an increasingly large number of indices globally, and particularly from globally significant indices. What that is helping to suggest is that we are at least completing another one of these lengthy ranges, which have been these intervals within this decade-long advance. And that's, I think, the base case scenario. The worst case scenario is that we're entering the bubble phase, and that once we've seen this breakout run its course, that deflationary pressures will start to mount once more, and that a recession really will take hold. That's, I guess, the worst case scenario. But in between the best and the worst case scenarios is the real potential that we are going to get additional upside here. Then, when I think one of the things we need to pay attention to is the oil price. And Brent crude is back in the region of its trend mean. It hasn't quite been able to push back up above it yet, and there has been this downward bias to trading over most of this year. The price for West Texas Intermediate is above its trend mean. It's still only around $58, and that's for the front month. When we then think about the futures curve, there's an acute backwardation. Every contract is in backwardation between the front month going all the way out to 2022, or even perhaps even 2023. Now, when you look at where those prices are trading 2 years out, well, perhaps 3 years out, they're around 51.50. That is not an economic level for a really quite significant chunk of the U.S. shale region. So what that suggests is we're either going to have to see prices rise further in order to encourage new supply back into the market, or we're going to have to see the backwardation change and move into a contango situation. Well, when we then think about the trend in terms of Brent, well, it's right in the region of the trend mean. There has been a downward bias. If it can push back above the $65 area, then that is going to enhance the potential for prices to push up towards $80. If we get to $80, then that is going to start encouraging additional supply into the market, particularly from those unconventional sources onshore USA. Well, when we then think that it is surging oil prices have been one of the leading indicators for the start of a recession, it's not happening right now. If we were to see a major problem between Russia or in Russia or in the Middle East or some sort of geopolitical event, then that could act as a stimulant to additional upside for oil prices. It would be something we obviously have to pay attention to. It's I think there's potential that we're going to see prices move higher. We may yet have to see some bankruptcies in the shale sector in order to take some of that supply out of the market. Chesapeake Energy would certainly be among those that would be one of the lead candidates for a significant problem. It has gone from 150 to 60 cents in the space of 2 or 3 weeks, and that isn't because there's been any good news. What is interesting, however, is that natural gas prices do look increasingly likely that we've seen a low, but the downward dynamic we saw in here today has certainly challenged that bias. It's right now in the region of the trend mean. It's going to have to pop on the upside and do so in a dynamic manner in order to lend any kind of life raft to some of those shale producers. And this $2.50 area absolutely needs to hold if the recovery scenario is to be given any kind of credence at all. Now, when we then think about what's going on in terms of the gold market, it continues to ease back. This has been a modest pace in terms of the consolidation, pulling back from 1550 to 1450 in the space of 3 months is not an especially dynamic decline compared to the kind of volatility that gold investors will be reasonably accustomed to. But the fact that we do have had a distinct absence of upward dynamics does suggest that there is scope here for some additional consolidation, that we may yet see it come all the way back down towards the trend mean. I rather think that that is more likely than not. When we then think about what's going on in terms of the silver price, well, it firmed for most of the last couple of weeks, but it was in negative territory in here today. And it also looks likely that it will unwind all of its overextension relative to the trend mean. The platinum price has bounced, but it was down on a dynamic move on Friday and was marginally steadier in here today. I don't think it's going to be out of the woods, really, until it can sustain a move above 925 to break that sequence of lower rally highs. When we think about the copper price, it has not yet been able to push back above its trend mean, but it has been reasonably steady. And I think that is probably one of the better arbiters of what is going on in China. The A-share index was in positive territory in here today, but again, not in an especially dynamic manner. The Hong Kong market was up about 1%, but the Shenzhen B-shares were down, and they are barely steady around this 900-point level. I think this is a better index to monitor in terms of what's really going on in the Chinese market, because when we look at, for example, something like the Shenzhen CSI, the CSI 300, then what we're really presented with is an index that is heavily manipulated by the government. It has been ranging below this 4,000 level now for most of the year. It really does need to sustain a move above that, but the point, of course, is that it is loaded with these state-owned enterprises, and that is equally true of the Hang Seng these days. The majority of its constituents are state-owned companies. It was up about 400 points in here today. It continues to hold the sequence of higher reaction lows, but it has got work to do in order to really confirm we're back in a demand-dominated environment. This is still a challenging environment geopolitically. The fact that the Democratic protesters have won a landslide victory in the election doesn't really hand them any power. Elections are a pressure release valve for populist movements or revolutionary movements. People believe that if they go to the ballot box that they can express their view and that it will be listened to. The problem with Hong Kong is that people have won a resounding victory in an election that doesn't give them any power. And when it comes to delegates who decide who the next leader of Hong Kong is going to be, well, Hong Kong people only have, or the Hong Kong electorate only get to elect 117 of 1,200 delegates who decide on who is going to be in charge. That's not exactly democratic. And of course, there's the rub. It is going to be a significant challenge for the Chinese to figure out how they can placate the protesters against a background where there are increasingly authoritarian tendencies. The leaking of the details of the algorithm behind the predicative policing that China is engaged in with the Uyghur population in Xinjiang as around the same time that the election in Hong Kong has taken place is obviously a none too subtle hint that this is what happens to people that disobey the law. It's also an indication that there are potentially leaks inside the Chinese government and that there is an opposition party within the administration that is making its voice heard. These are all machinations that you get inside a controlled state where there isn't a great deal of visibility on exactly what is going on. It does, however, suggest that there are risks when we think about what's going on in China. The Australian market was in positive territory in here today. It continues to range in mostly above the trend mean. It's certainly been assisted by the weakness of the Aussie dollar, which was in negative territory in here today. The dollar index has been a tower of stability. It continues to firm from the region of the trend mean. At least the USA still has a positive interest rate differential, despite the fact that they've cut interest rates three times. But the size of the Fed's balance sheet continues to expand. And I think if we had to look for just one reason why we're seeing additional interest in stocks, it's because of that liquidity infusion. $300 billion in the space of 2 months is nothing to sneeze at. And it rather suggests that there is the potential we're going to see additional liquidity measures. I think there is some speculation that the Fed is going to have to add even more money into the repo market to provide liquidity ahead of the year end. And that is likely to represent a tailwind for the wider market, not least because this has been a liquidity-fueled bull market for a decade, and nothing has really happened to question that conclusion. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.